This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects us all, but most of us don't understand, presented in a format that allows you to consume it in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. So let's get to it. This season of Crucial Tech is brought to you by Safety National Insurance. Safety National Cyber Insurance protects large organizations against network security and privacy risks, reimbursing damages and financial loss arising from accidental or malicious incidents to computer networks, software, and data. Coverage options address various risks ranging from liability, business interruption, reputational harm, penalties, and more. Visit safetynational.com for additional details. Happy New Year, and welcome to episode one of the eighth season of Crucial Tech. And we're starting off with a bang. Later this year, Cyber Protection Magazine will publish a special issue focused on election security. And we started the process this week when I got a chance to sit down with Hari Hursti, an internationally recognized election security expert. Now, if you don't know who he is, if you've had a chance to catch the HBO specials Hacking Democracy, 2006, and Kill Chain, The Cyber War Against America's Elections in 2020, you've seen a lot of Hari because he was central to both of those documentaries. Now, he and I have tried to get together several times in the past 3 years. The closest we got was participating in a panel on the future of elections, and that was a fascinating experience, but we always just seemed to miss each other. Well, we finally got a chance to do it, and we sat down at a startup incubator in Palo Alto. Now, I like to think I'm pretty well informed about elections. I even have a series of YouTube videos that I've done with a friend explaining California ballot issues that have been watched by thousands of people. I get calls and messages constantly as elections are coming close, asking about what I think about this candidate or this issue or another piece of BS information. And I read everything. I am one of these guys that actually reads my voter pamphlet from cover to cover because I want to know what's going on. But after 45 minutes of talking with Hari, I learned just how much I don't know. For example, we all know that Americans have a right to absolute privacy when it comes to what and who they vote for, unless they're in the U.S. military. I did not know that. If you're in the U.S. military, you don't get a secret ballot. That's the way it goes. I also didn't know that technology that helps disabled people vote generally makes all voting insecure. Hari and I talked about that too. In fact, our entire conversation made me feel pretty damn ignorant. At the same time, the work Hari has been doing to make our elections secure have been largely successful. Now, one of the things he does is during DEF CON, which is an event following Black Hat in Las Vegas, he has a group of hackers get together, and he buys surplus elections machines, voting machines, and he says, here's a chance to hack. And we talk about that and how easy it is to actually hack a voting machine. And they're still very insecure, which makes places like Louisiana kind of weird in that they refuse to use hand-marked paper ballots. But the thing is, hand-marked paper ballots are the most secure and unhackable way to vote anywhere, not just for the U.S. And for the most part, the U.S. is standardized on that form of voting. That doesn't mean it's completely secure, though, and Hari is working on that, too. Hari is one of the, well, actually probably the only funder of an organization called the Election Integrity Foundation, which is the sponsoring organization at DEF CON for the Voting Village. And I wanted to mention them. If you go to votingvillage.org, you can find their website. And they need donations. So I'm making a plug for them right now. They're doing God's work in this world by making sure that we have safe and integrous elections. So let's go to our interview with Hari, and I hope you don't feel as ignorant, but grab a cup of coffee, or you might want to have something stronger, because we're going to be laying down some truth. Here he is, Hari Hursti. So, Hari Hursti, the election security expert.
So they say.
That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great pleasure to meet you in person. I mean, I really enjoyed that panel we were on last year. This is going to be a busy year for elections, not just in the U.S., because we've got it in South Korea, we've got it in the U.K., Poland has just finished one.
Indonesia is in February, very consequential election in that region.
Yeah.
Malaysia has been going through the cycle too, so this is a big year globally in all regions.
Are we any closer to being secure now as opposed to what it was when you first burst onto the scene with those HBO specials?
So the answer is yes and no. There have been a lot of good initiatives, good progress in certain areas, and there has been a new technology marching in, which is untested, unproven, basically one step forward, one step back. So overall, I think what people think as election, which is the casting of the ballot, counting the ballot, and that part of process, that has been becoming more secure. How the ballot is cast, how the voters are enlisted, so a voter roll, voter registration, and how the results are reported, that has been largely going backwards. So overall process, I think, is not moving much either way, but if you look where the controversies are in public's mind, those areas actually are more secure.
Yeah, that's it was said by Chris Krebs that the 2020 election was the most secure election that the United States has ever seen.
I wouldn't say so, but it was a more secure than previous elections. And again, our laws and our idea of what democracy means in the United States has changed over time.
Yeah.
So you cannot go and say this compares somehow the elections we have 100 years ago. But I absolutely agree that in recent history, this was more secure than any of the previous elections in recent history.
So as we're looking forward, I mean, we've gotten to the point where I think the first time I heard those stats, 65% of elections in the United States were done electronically. And since that time, since your HBO specials, we've moved back to paper ballots for the most part.
So, first of all, the paper ballots in most of the United States are still processed electronically because the flavor of democracy in the U.S. is almost uniquely complex.
Right.
For that reason, we have to use computerized technology almost everywhere in the US to produce results. However, what has happened is that we are using paper ballots, which allows us to go back, as long as the governance over the paper is secured, it allows us to go back and verify the results, and you have a remedy of recounting and producing trustworthy results if you find that your results are wrong. So when we were deeply wrong, that was when the electronic voting meant that there is no physical ballot, there's only electronic ballot, which can be altered by hacking, by just glitches, whatever. So we are back in paper ballot. We are not fully secure in that either. And the reason is that the voting system vendors have hijacked what paper ballot means. Paper ballot in our head is what is now called hand-marked paper ballot. That means that the voter actually fills the ballot with the pencil. Mm-hmm. Today, a lot of marketing has been done to claim that a computer-filled paper ballot or computer printing barcode on a paper would be paper ballot. Yes, it is paper and it's a ballot, but since I don't know very many humans who are very good in reading barcodes, especially barcodes which are encoded so that even if you use your mobile phone to read the barcode, you don't know what it means. That is a meaningless paper ballot. So we have to be very careful with this redefining what the words means. Mm-hmm. So yes, we have massively got back to the paper ballots. Some of the paper ballots are useful and they have preserved the voter's intent in permanent media because it's a voter who marked that ballot. Some of the paper ballots are hearsay. The voter used a computer, the computer printed the paper, and this is the computer's hearsay, which might be Chinese telephone or not, what the voter actually tried to do.
Yeah.
And then the last paper ballots are the completely meaningless paper ballots, where the only thing on a paper is a barcode, which no one can verify whether it is true or not.
Yeah, I think in San Mateo County, where I live, we've got both, because we have the absentee ballots, which were the mail-in ballots, which are all paper.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go down to a voting place, they will have machines there.
Yep.
Where you type in what you want and it prints out a paper copy of it for yourself. And I'm assuming also for the election center.
Well, it has to be, because otherwise what good does it mean that you have the paper?
Yeah.
Also, you cannot have a paper which proves how you voted, because that would enable vote buying, selling, and coercion. Because the moment a secret ballot means that even with the cooperation of voter, the voter cannot prove how he or she voted. Because that will secret ballot means you cannot, with any effort you do, reveal reliably how you voted, because that will open vote buying, selling, which are felonies, and coercion.
Interesting. Okay, so even in California, where we've made all these changes to make sure that, you know, vote by mail and primarily, we're not secure in that way either.
Vote by mail's biggest problem is vote coercion. I was in central U.S. Helping one Secretary of State, who, and they have started doing a lot more mail-in voting. And we commissioned students to do an interview how the voters felt about the new method of voting, mail-in voting. And one of the most common answer was, my wife or my husband took the ballot and voted. So personally, I don't know, because I didn't vote it. The ballot comes in the mail and goes out. But the problem in that state also is that vote coercion, especially when you leave the cities, when you go to rural area, vote coercion is a big problem. And again, when you have mail-in ballot, the vote coercion is in the rural areas and in the smaller communities, it's a big problem. So the reason why we went to voting in a polling place was allow the voters to vote as they want without fear of expressing their opinions.
When I took a visit many, many years ago, this is back during the Ford Carter campaign, I visited a community up near Mount Shasta, mm-hmm. in Siskiyou County. And they did something completely different in that they held a town hall meeting for the presidential election, and they asked for a show of hands on who was for Ford and who was for Carter, which I thought was absolutely amazing, but that was approved in Siskiyou County at the time. So they didn't necessarily believe in secret ballots there.
Yeah, I mean, caucuses in primaries, as alternative primaries, that's exactly town hall meeting. And basically, there are states where the counties can make their own election laws, which are superseding the state laws. So there are places where, theoretically speaking, this can happen still today. But especially if what you meant is in primary, caucuses are common practice in primaries. And caucuses are not elections, they are caucuses, which is exactly town hall. Also, I want to point out, when we talk about the computerized filling of the ballot, University of Michigan made a recent study where they took a real ballot, but they simplified. So they reduced the number of races. But it's a ballot which the voters already have voted in a real election. They should be familiar with that. So there was test voters who had been told that now we're testing a new method of voting where the computer is going to fill the ballot for you based on your instructions. The voters were multiple times reminded to check your ballot. Check, make sure that the ballot is what you wanted. What the voters didn't know that the computer will cheat every time. Every ballot produced is wrong, 100%. 7% of voters got it. Only 7% got it when they had been multiple times asked to verify their ballot. And this was simpler ballot than what the real ballot was in the election. We humans, we have a very poor capability of verifying.
Or maybe we're just too trusting.
Well, it's not only that. If you think that you have the ballot, the text is, this is a constitutional amendment, blah, 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 and you have the text and then you say yes or no. But then in the summary ballot, which the computer says, Proposition 38, yes or no. Do you remember what Proposition 38 was compared to Proposition 37 or 36?
Well, I do. But
yeah, but the most of people don't. So even when you're trying to verify, you can't. And that's the problem of the people don't want to be reminded that we, as a human, we have a very bad cognitive skills, except, of course, the certain person who have been acing these tests. But we normal humans, we are not very good in that. And so making people to verify the ballot has two problems. First of all, in a complex ballot, you really don't remember with the summary ballot the whole text, so you cannot really verify it. That's the first thing. But the other thing is the role of a voter. The role of the voter is not to be a system tester. If you are saying your job is to verify that after you voted that this ballot is matching your choices, now you are actually not anymore voter, you are system tester, which is a fairly good, well-paid job and specialized skill. Are we actually going to, is it fair to settle this responsibility of system tester to every voter? That's not the voter's role in the Constitution or in principle in democracy. So we have to also remember this is voter is asked to vote and express their opinion and choices, not to verify if the computer they are using is working accurately.
So who's in the United States, what state has the most secure voting system?
Any state who are using hand marked paper ballots, and in a sense hand-marked paper ballot, even if it's a mail-in, is better than the alternative. That's the fact.
So states like Louisiana, which have no paper ballots.
Louisiana is a unique state because they just purchased a new system, which is unauditable because it doesn't have paper ballot.
Right.
In this age and time and age, I cannot understand how the memo didn't get there that this is a bad idea, but that's what they did.
Well, in order to deal with a good memo, you have to be able to read. Louisiana's not very good at that.
Well,
the other
part here is that they bought a Dominion image cast system, which is the same system which was heart of the controversy in Arizona, in Maricopa
right.
County, where they don't use ballot marking device but use the other end. But in Georgia, where the in-person voting was done with the image cast. Little known fact is that that actual device can be configured either to produce paper ballot or not. So also, even people who are closely following election, when they heard that Louisiana has been acquiring image cast this model, they thought it means that it's ballot marking device. They didn't realize that same device have multiple operational modes. So maybe part of the reason why there was no outcry of why Louisiana is doing this, because that same device can be used in massively different ways. And this is the same thing where I hate when people are taking my affidavits and declaration in federal courts and twisting them. And I give a good example. I was making in one affidavit, I declared that how the Dominion system is used in Fulton County, which is Atlanta, Georgia, poses an extreme risk. And people wanted to read. I'm not a fan of Dominion system, I'm not a fan of any of the system, but, right. but people were reading I was saying something especially about Dominion. They ignored the part Fulton County. Because even when Georgia was supposed to be, they have the same system everywhere, and you would assume they work the system the same way, actually there's a massive differences in operational security. So that same system in different counties can have very different security posture, and at the same time the same system in the same county can have different security postures or between elections depending how they are using it this time. So okay. you have to be very specific if you want to have a non-emotional, fact-based conversation. And if somebody is testifying something specific, the specificity is there for a reason. It's not that, please generalize this as you want. No, that's not what it says. It says this election, this time, this system, because the operational principles can change. Same thing, Louisiana can make their system not good, but better by configuring the system and starting to produce paper ballots with it.
Okay.
That's the same hardware. So it's very important to understand how system is operated, how it's used, how it's set up. Mm-hmm. And these all voting systems today in the US are extremely bad. And what it means in practical terms is that it is transferring a lot of the security requirements to physical security, which of course in marketing terms leads this system as safe, you don't have to worry about it. Yes, you have to worry about it. So now the physical security layer and how you're operating is actually is saddled with the unbearable load to secure the system. Because the mitigation, the argument why it's safe, is always pointing to the physical security layer. And that's what makes the difference in a number of places. Whether the system is more secure or less secure, it's the physical safety is a big part of it.
Okay. So one of your claims to fame is you're running this contest at Black Hat, having White Hat hackers, let's call them that. Actually hack into voting systems.
It's not a competition. It's an educational event.
The whole thing of Black Hat is educational.
Well, it's a DEF CON. Yeah. So it's the Black Hat is first. We do that in DEF CON. But it's educational. And if I go back, before Digital Millennium Copyright Act in the Trillionaire Review, and I was one of the people who wrote that recommendation. There's multiple groups of people. There's now an exempt for security research of voting machines. So the Digital Millennium Copyright Act does not apply for Pronavide security research of voting machines. That made DEF CON Voting Village possible. Before that, there was a very small group of privileged people, which I was included, who were part of the studies and were able to see how voting machines work. We at Voting Village have single-handedly, thousand-folded, if not 10,000-folded, the number of people who have a fairly good understanding how voting systems work and how poor the hardware and software is. Okay. And that is what the DEF CON Voting Village is for. We know every system can be hacked because it has been hacked. There's not a single system in the United States who have been exposed for a open security research and has been left standing. Every single one has failed. So we know that's not the point. The point is that you can verify yourself, you can learn what are the insecurities, and maybe for that reason you then go out and you start advocating for better choices like hand-marked paper ballot, you start advocating for a physical security layer. And every single time the voting system vendors come and say, oh, this is unrealistic, they are opening the voting machines. You know, in a polling place, there will be people, security guards, who will stop you from mingling with the voting machine. But that's not the point. The point is that you study the machine, you learn the vulnerability, and then it should be fixed. And every single time when you are asked, well, can you show how you can use it? That is actually the unethical thing. Mm-hmm. Once you start to think about weaponization, you are not anymore doing the security research, which you are allowed to do. Now you are actually not anymore white hat, you become a black hat.
Right.
So the actual voting system vendors' response is, oh, you didn't commit a crime, you did the good thing, we don't want the good thing, please commit a crime, then we can believe you. And that's not how this is supposed to work.
Okay, so the event is merely to show that it can be done, not how it can be done.
No, it's for people to find out themselves, yeah, how they would be able to find a vulnerability.
Okay.
That's why we don't do let's hack this election thing, because that would be teaching a practical skill which is unethical. This is about finding it is possible and also finding what is not possible. When the Stop the Steal people started screaming, oh, there's a hidden algorithm which steals the votes, I invited, well, we have the machines, find the algorithm. You know, nothing stops you. If you are so convinced there is this algorithm, open the machine, pull the chip, look the code, and show the algorithm. You will be famous.
And no one's done that yet.
No, but it has been done because there is no that kind of algorithm.
Has Mike Lindell actually tried to do that?
Mike Lindell's people have been, some of the people have been in a voting village. We actually have a little bit of incident 2 years ago for that reason, because that was the first time after 6 years when certain people close to his operation were stealing our stuff. They were physically stealing, and we got them. So that was and we have never before had anything try to be stolen. Not even USB sticks have been. It's really. And again, how smart you are that it's a facility operated by a casino and you try to steal something. There's no cameras in casinos ever. They just want to run a camera-free environment.
That's one of the reasons I think that we have, other than what happened with MGM Grand, mm-hmm, and Caesars, there haven't been a whole lot of cyber attacks that have been successful on casinos.
There haven't been publicized cyber attacks. This is not anything. Those there have been a lot of cyber attacks, but these got published. And the other thing is that this was different kind of attack, because this was ransomware and that kind of thing. There's a long history of stealing from the gambling machines and that kind of rigging. That's casinos actually have a very interesting security model, because you have a government oversight which is looking over casinos, because the casinos have a strong intention also to rig the software, because if they can switch the house win ratio without the government knowing, now they will pay less taxes compared to their winnings. So actually a lot of the security of casinos don't come from the casinos wanting to not to have their money stolen, but it comes from the government who wants to make certain that the casino doesn't change the software they have verified to have certain winning ratio.
Okay.
So again, it's kind of funny, because a lot of people would say intuitively that casinos have good security because because casinos don't want their money to be stolen. No, it actually is a large part of its government regulation, because the casino will be stealing the money.
If we only had that kind of government regulations relating to our elections.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but again, this is a good example why regulation is necessary. Mm-hmm. If you would let the casinos to run their own gambling cybersecurity on their own, the results would be not the secure system they have today.
Okay. I got one more question for you, and this may be outside your area of expertise, but we've made good progress on securing our elections with our systems. But does that pose the greater threat to our elections, or does deep fakes?
So these are, we don't live in a world where you have a single weapon. Everybody only have a bow and nobody have a stone sling. These are different classes of attacks.
Right.
And when we started Voting Village 7 years ago, one of our first theme to say is we need a human firewall. We didn't have the current misinformation, disinformation, malinformation boom. But already at the time we said we need to have a human firewall. We need to teach people how to validate the claims given to them, whether it's true or not. And at that time, ironically, the claim was that voting machines cannot be hacked. It's absolutely impossible to hack voting machines. And we had to tell, no, keep your mind open. It could be, we will show it can be hacked. And we show it so that it can get fixed.
Right.
Right now, it's the opposite. Say, yeah, it still can be hacked, but not the way you claim. but at the time, we were all in the first Voting Village, for reasons completely different than today, we were talking about the human firewall, needing to have a human filter, understanding the source and understanding all of that. But these are different classes of attacks. And of course, both of these contribute to the third problem, which is that if either distrusting the machines or the misinformation causes apathy and people stop voting and stop participating, that is equally dangerous. So we have derivatives, things deriving from both of these threats, which are a second generation threat, which is apathy. So there, none of these threats are mutually exclusive from each other. None of these are more dangerous than the other. We have to address all of them at the same time.
I got nothing else. that's great. But yeah, and that last part, the greatest danger is creating apathy.
And that is also, if you think Cold War, the American threat model in election was wrong when I started 18 years ago, 19 years ago. Because at the time, the idea was that the threat is a dishonest candidate and a supporter of dishonest candidate doing locally everything they want in their city or whatnot to win. There was a complete forgetting the fact that Cold War was just behind a corner, and in Cold War, that's an ideological war. And in ideological war, if you think that kind of player, it's all about undermining the society, a trusted society. Mm-hmm. While you might have a preferred candidate, that is your secondary goal. Your primary long-term goal is to undermine the people's trust to the whole society. And sometimes you do that by creating massive swings to divide the population. But we really, when I got started, there was no idea of a ideological disruptors, nation state who is well-funded, patient, they have all the time in the world, and whose primary goal is long-term goal is to destroy the trust to the society and destroy the society as whole. And right now we are seeing that. And our threat model, that the reason why United States, a number of Western countries were not ready for social media driven and now AI and social media driven, before that micro-targeting market advertising, a misinformation campaign, was because this threat model had been ignored.
Mm.
Do you think ranked choice voting can overcome some of these weaknesses?
Ranked choice voting has a lot of good qualities because it allows a viable third party candidate or independent candidates. It's no longer that if you are voting a third party candidate or independent, you have to be afraid that you are permanently throwing your vote away or you're weakening your secondary. So it is good in that sense. The thing what it needs is that when election becomes one layer more complex, then you have to do a good job of explaining how auditing this in this work. Professor Philip Stark has done a good job of inventing a common person understandable, easy to follow risk limiting audit methodology for ranked choice voting. But it has to be explained wider, because if you do a complete show, a showroom thing, a theater, like what was the Maricopa so-called audit, that wouldn't have been possible for ranked choice voting. And the ranked choice voting can be easily in the public's mind turned to be, and it already has started, turned to be another thing of unauditable magic. It's not. But it requires another layer of education to explain before the problem what happens, how this result is verified, and if there's a problem, what is the process of mitigation, what is the remedy, how you actually are manually going and verifying this publicly. And right now that step is existing on the textbook, it is not existing on the civics and in a wide understanding of population. And that is the risk that we have a massive a campaign to discredit the city with the ranked choice voting and the election to create a public disturbance.
Okay.
But this, the good thing, we already know what is the solution. We just have to get that solution to be publicly known.
Are there any companies that I should be talking to about their technology for elections, election security, that sort of thing?
As I said, unfortunately, we don't have a company which is a meaningful way better than the others.
Okay.
There are a number of similarities between the companies. There are things which are particularly bad, like internet voting. And internet voting, by the way, comes with a number of different it's electronic return of ballot. That's internet voting. Mobile phone voting, that's internet voting. Blockchain voting, even bad, that's a especially bad internet voting. But it's internet voting nevertheless. So that's one part. And the second part is really, as I said, the voting system vendors have been aggressively, because it's so profitable, hijacking what paper ballot means. Paper ballot in public's mind is what we call hand-marked paper ballot. And it's very important that people who are advocating for secure, more transparent, more trustworthy elections in their own communities and speaking with their local representative when new systems are chosen to understand why ballot marking devices are bad. And ballot marking devices were conceived with the best of intention. The ballot marking devices were conceived in Help America Vote Act of 2002 as a tool to have the small group of disabled voters, especially people like print disabled voters, to have the same privacy when they vote as the general public. Again, the privacy is so important. That was how it was generally acceptable. You have to be able to have your secret ballot. Now, a little known fact is that there are a number of laws which are saying all the voters have to be voting with using the same method. So all of a sudden, once the small, when the whole idea was, we don't care if ballot marking devices are insecure because it's just a small, tiny fraction of people who need them. Once the tiny little fraction were introduced, now you have the ballot marking device. Now the next voice, oh, now everybody needs to have it because everybody has to vote the same. So now all of a sudden the excuse why you are introducing less secure method becomes, and now everybody goes to the less secure vote.
Okay.
And that's one thing which we really have to understand how slippery slope it is. We have only one result. That's the outcome of the election. It's a logical fallacy to say, I get to choose how insecure my vote is because it's my vote. Well, actually, it's only one result. And if you are choosing to be insecure, you're actually disenfranchising all the other voters. Because if you, small group, and your choose to be insecure is changing the outcome, you disenfranchise everybody else. When technology is introduced, and this is the push from the companies in the US, the idea is always introduced that you have this small, tiny little group of voters, tiny, tiny little group, and we want to give them the right to vote, and it's important. So hence, let's have this insecure and very bad idea, because it doesn't matter, it's just those few little voters. And next thing is, oh, because those voters have it, everybody has to have it. And this is how you introduce this is how the insecure voting is all the time seeping back to US. And that's why when you asked the question, I said, unproven technology coming in, this is the excuse. Excuse is, well, we are just helping those little group of voters without understanding how the laws work and how the regulation. If you allow a insecure voting for these tiny little people, next thing, everybody has to use the same insecure method.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I would be, if I would know this, I would say, well, you have thousands of people who are overseas. Maybe we could help them, or the disabled voters. All of these are noble causes, and I'm very sympathetic because I personally spend a lot of election days overseas. I take the time to mail in the ballot in time. I do all of that because, again, making it for me easier starts the slope, which means that my insecure vote is going to be potentially becoming everybody else's insecure vote too.
Okay.
Dominion and ESNS are the two big companies. And those companies have acquired other companies. So a lot of systems which are, say, this is ESNS, this is Dominion system, they actually are sometimes just something they acquired. And if you look, for example, the assets of old Diebold's as Premier, some of those machines are maintained by ESNS, and some of those are maintained by Dominion today. So that's another thing what creates confusion. Right now, people, if you would have asked 5 years ago, most people thought that Diebold machines are ESNS today. Now people think they are Dominion. The truth is, they are split the maintenance between those two companies.
Okay.
But there's a lot of things behind here where both companies use massive amount of foreign technology. And when you look, for example, the executive order 14028, zero trust and software supply chain, if you look today's voting machines and you look the principles of federal government, executive order, secret, they won't pass. None of them will pass. The level of security we demand as a baseline in federal data processing standard, federal information processing standard, FIPS, none of the voting systems even remotely are passing that. Again, election as whole, the election technology as whole, is almost uniquely bad comparing to other things of government, which is there's a lot of bad things government. Government is not known for having good and secure system. Even with this low bar, election is still uniquely bad.
Okay.
I think the bottom line we can get out of this interview is that how we vote is our responsibility. Whether we want it to be secure or insecure, that's our responsibility. There are things you can do to make sure your vote is secure. Like for me and my family, we use what used to be called absentee ballots, but now mail-in ballots. And we discuss what we're going to talk about, and then we each make our own decisions. We seal them up in the envelopes, and then we walk them down to the county center and put them in the drop box. That's probably the most secure way of doing it. Is there possibility for voter fraud in this? Of course there is. But the instances are so infinitesimally small. They're not even rounding errors. So, you know, that's our responsibility. And I want to thank Hari for the time he gave us. It was very educational for me. I hope it was for you as well. Make sure you check out votingvillage.org and make a donation. Keep that organization going, because it's not going to get any better through our elected officials or even through the companies that make the equipment to do this. They have different reasons for wanting to do things. I also want to thank Safety National for sponsoring this program. It's going to be a great year, and we're very excited to have them for a partner. So if you have any questions or concerns, contact us at cyberprotection-magazine.com. You can give us a message there. If you have any thoughts or ideas, it might turn into an article. In the meantime, keep listening and stay safe out there, folks. This has been Crucial Tech, a Foot Washer Media production.